We are in a Bible study series right now. This will be the second part. We began last Tuesday with the book of Esther. And we covered all of chapter 1. And Lord willing, we'll go through all of chapter 2 tonight. It's a little bit longer, I believe, than chapter 1 was. But these verses go pretty quickly. So we're going to be in Esther part 2 tonight, and it's chapter 2. We're going to look at all 23 verses. A few key things to remember in this, and I always butcher these names, but the king's name here is pronounced Ahasuerus, is the way you pronounce his name. Now, I may stumble on that word, so you can laugh at me if you want to. I don't care. He's also known as Xerxes in the Greek. He was a king at that time, the king of Persia. He was over 127 provinces, a large kingdom that he reigned over. He was kind of a brutal king. And then other people that we've read about so far, we read about his queen, Vashti. She was removed from the throne last time in chapter 1. He became very angry when, in his drunken party that he was in, called for his wife to come and to parade around in front of all the members of his party, and she refused, and it angered him. And so he brought a council of men together to kind of give her a little trial to see what they were going to do about it, and they decided they would remove her as queen, and she would never have another chance to be queen again. So they stripped her of everything she had, and she lost her home, her husband, and her throne, all in the matter of minutes. We see a few things about this king Ahasuerus, that he is unstable. He likes to drink. He's angry. He's got a violent, raging temper. And the Bible mentioned that he was very wroth when he got rid of his wife. And, of course, we know that that means he was a raging bull when that happened. And so that's a few of his downfalls. Of course, his main downfall is he doesn't know God. He thinks he's his own god. He worships other gods. These Persians, they worshiped strange gods, and they didn't believe in the God of heaven like Mordecai and Esther would. But tonight, let's start with verse 1. Esther chapter 2, starting with verse 1, the Bible says, "After these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her." So we pick up right where we left off last time. He got rid of the queen. Now, there's some things that the Bible did not record that went on in the life of this king, Ahasuerus or Xerxes, in that time period. And what we know from history is that in that time period between the time that he got rid of Queen Vashti until the time he brought on his next queen, there were several years passed. Four years, actually, according to the Bible. The Bible shows us it's been 4 years, and we'll see that in a minute. But during that time period, after he got rid of Vashti, he tried to have war upon Greece. He spent billions of dollars and had thousands of men build these two pontoon bridges to cross over to try to go into Greece to conquer Greece. It was always his heart to conquer Greece because of what they had done, the Athenians had done to his father. And so he was always trying to get back at Greece and defeat them. Well, he had these two pontoon bridges built across this huge gap that was out there. I've got this reference here somewhere, if I'll find it here in a minute, and I'll give you a little more information about it. It was called the Hellespont. And it's about a 4 mile wide strait that separates Europe from Asia. And so the only way to get there, he had to span this water. Well, he couldn't take all these soldiers across that strait without having bridges. So he had some engineers come up with a plan to build two pontoon bridges to cross that area. Well, before they were able to cross it, a mighty storm raged and destroyed the bridges. He became so angry that history tells us that he ordered all the engineers to be beheaded. He ordered all of the soldiers to go out in the middle of the water with whips and whip the water 300 times while cursing it. And then he had them all get a brand and heat it up and brand the sea. So he was a very unstable king, very angry king. Well, history tells us that all that went on, but the Bible tells us that it was 4 years in between this reign, and we'll see that in just a second. But as this verse 1 says here, his wrath was appeased. So in other words, he's not angry anymore right now. He's not drunk right now. And he's thinking a little bit more clearly. And his mind goes back to when he got rid of his queen Vashti. And he remembers, oh, by the way, I need to replace her, my trophy wife, with a new one. So all kings needed a trophy wife in those days. And so he's going to be looking for one. Well, so they appoint a committee to look for a new queen. Look at verse 2. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan, the palace, to the house of the women, under the custody of Hegi, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them. Well, no doubt this king already had a large harem of women at his disposal. All kings in that time had a harem. Now, a harem, if you're not aware, is this large group of women that the kings would keep. It was a collection of women. They would round them up and they would keep them in different houses. One of them was for the young virgins that were preparing to become his wife. The other house was a house for concubines, where this was women that had become his wife. I mean, this is all very weird to us. This is not the way we do things. But in that time period, and these kind of people, that's what they did. These kings had these large harems of women. The historian Josephus tells us that when they went out to choose these young virgins for the king this time, that they found 400 women and brought them to the palace for his choosing. So they decide to go out and do this search for these women, and they're only looking for certain kinds. They have to be fair young virgins. Now, these are going to be pure women that are beautiful, that's going to be coming for the king. And they're going to put them up in the women's section that's only for these type of women. Well, these women will be added to the harem, and it says that they were given things for purification. This would consist of things like oils and perfumes and the kind of medieval makeup, if you would. Things to beautify them, to keep them clean and pure, to cleanse their skin and their hair. They would always have to be kept in immaculate condition, just in case the king called for them. So they were given these things to make themselves beautiful. And there was actually a 1 year period that they would do this, these women. From the time they were chosen to the time they went before the king, there was a period of purification, 6 months for one part of it. But we know that Esther, it was a full year that she was in this process of purification, getting prepared to go before this king who has Ahasuerus. Well, verse 4 says, and let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti, and the thing pleased the king. And he did so. Well, he thinks this is a grand idea to bring all these beautiful young women to his house so that he can choose whoever he wants for his next queen. And he agrees. So they begin the roundup. They go out into all the 127 provinces, and they had men appointed that would go out and choose these young women. And they would bring them to the palace. Well, one thing you're going to find in a heathen society like this, whenever God is not in people's lives, you're going to find stuff like this going on. They treated these women as no more than material possessions. There was no love there. There was no caring for these women. It was simply for the king's disposal. It was almost like a disposable lighter to him for these women. They were nothing to him. It was nothing to these men to go out and just find these girls. They were just disposable in their eyes. He might as well just been picking out a new crown or a new chariot or something to him. It's no big deal. And so they go out and round up all these young women. And verse 5 says, now in Shushan, the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. Well, now we're introduced to one of the other main characters of the book of Esther, and that is Mordecai. He's a key player in this whole book. As the Bible said there, he is one of the Jews that was carried away into captivity when Nebuchadnezzar took over, when he came in and destroyed the city and brought all these people over. You remember Daniel was one of those in captivity. Well, Mordecai is one of these that's been taken. And it says that he was from the tribe of Benjamin. That's going to come in to be a very important thing to remember as we go through this. Now, the name of Mordecai is not a Hebrew name. He's using a Persian name. The Bible doesn't give us his Hebrew name. But Mordecai is a Persian name. So what we can kind of glean from this information, because we're not given his Hebrew name, is the fact that he probably, by this time, all of the captives were free to go back home. God had allowed them to come out of exile, and they were supposed to go back to Jerusalem, all these people in captivity. But there was a part of these people that stayed behind. They stayed in Persia. They stayed in other places. They didn't go back after the exile. He's one of those. So by giving only his Persian name, we come to the belief that most likely he took up with the Persian culture. He enjoyed living there. He was doing the things of the Persians. He didn't do God's will, as we can tell. He should have went back from where he came from, but he did not. Now, his name, like I mentioned, is being that Persian name, you may remember when Daniel was taken to captivity, how they changed his name. You know, that wasn't his name. His name was, he was renamed to Belshazzar. They called him Belshazzar when he got over there. And then, of course, his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their names were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But they were renamed to these Babylonian names. And so it was to identify with their culture, and it was part of the brainwashing process. You identify with us. And so Mordecai's identifying with the Persians here. One thing I do want to stress, and I've stressed this before, even though someone may be out of God's will, because it was God's will for them to go back to Jerusalem, it was God's will for them to come out of exile, but yet he didn't do it. But God still uses this man. Now, there was some bad things said about these folks that stayed behind. In fact, God had some very strong things to say about a lot of these people. But he still used them. Even though they were being disobedient, they are still his people. They're still his remnant. Now, verse 7 says, "And he brought up Hadassah," that is Esther, "his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter." Well, now we're introduced to the main character of the book, Esther. Now, you notice that they gave both of her names. Hadassah was her name, and then we're given her Persian name of Esther. Hadassah means myrtle, and Esther means star. There's a belief that the reason she was named that is because they worship stars in Persia, and that perhaps she was named after a star. But Esther, she's Mordecai's cousin. Now, you may have heard wrongly throughout the years that it was her uncle. It's not her uncle. It was his uncle that was her father. He's her cousin. He was the nephew of her father. So she is a cousin here. And so he takes her into his own home and raises her as his own daughter because her parents are killed. We don't know why they got killed, how it happened, anything, but the Bible doesn't mention it. It just says there that her father and mother were dead, and he took her for his own daughter. So he's raised her up in his home, and he's a loving father to her, stepfather. And one important thing to notice, the Bible says that Esther was fair and beautiful. No doubt from reading this whole book, we're going to find that she's probably the most beautiful woman that they found in all this roundup. And she lights up everybody's eyes that sees her. Verse 8 says, "So it came to pass, when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together under Shushan, the palace, to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also into the king's house, to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the women. And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him, and he speedily gave her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens which were meet to be given her, out of the king's house, and he preferred her and her maids unto the best place of the house of the women." So all the fair, beautiful maidens are rounded up, brought to the king's palace, to this place, the House of the Women, it's called. Now, this is the section that all the young virgins have been kept in. It's not the concubine section. So Esther is caught the eye of this keeper, Haggai. He's a eunuch. He is the one that's over all the women. And he keeps eye on them, and he makes sure that they're prepared and ready. And he's a strict schoolmaster. But she has caught his eye. He really likes her. He sees something in her that's different than everybody else. And so he gives her extra things. He gives her 7 maidens to watch after, and he gives her the very best house in the whole women's house. And so he's special to her. Now, as they're there for this purification, they're getting themselves ready to go before the king. And like I said, it's strange to us. We wouldn't do things like this, but in that time, that's the common. But she's found favor. Verse 10 says, Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. Well, we can tell by reading our Bible that Mordecai had some kind of position in the palace. He was able to go in and out as he pleased into different places. So he had some kind of position. We don't know what it was, but he had a position. He's going to get a better position before it's all over with. But right now, he's got some kind of way that he can go in and out and go near that women's house. Not every man's going to be able to do that. He is able to. And he's kept a special watch over his adopted daughter. And he asks about her, and he wants to make sure everything's going fine. And he also warned her, don't tell people that you're kin to me, and don't tell people you're a Jew. He's wanted to keep her safe. If they find out she's a Jew, it could eliminate her chances of going before the king. They may just go ahead and dispose of her then, not being worthy enough or whatever. But he says, don't reveal who you are. Don't reveal your background or your nationality, and keep it a secret. And so he went before every day at the woman's house, courthouse there, and asked, you know, how she's doing. Verse 12 says, now when every maid's turn was come to go into King Ahasuerus, after that she had been 12 months, according to the manner of the women, for so were the days of their purifications accomplished, to wit, 6 months with oil of myrrh, and 6 months with sweet odors, and with other things for the purifying of the women. Then thus came every maiden unto the king. Whatsoever she desired was given her to go with her out of the house of the women unto the king's house. Well, we find now that this, like I said, it's a 12-month purification process. You know, it's what they did. 6 months of just preparing themselves with oils, oil of myrrh, and 6 months with sweet odors. These are perfumes and things that they prepared for these women. So they were constantly beautifying themselves and preparing themselves. That sounds like a long time to get ready. Now, I know some of you women take a long time to get ready, but that's ridiculous right there. That took them a year. Well, anyway, it's their way of doing things. And the purification process has now come to the end, 12 months. And in verse 14 says, in the evening, she went, talking about our main character here, she went on the morrow, and she returned unto the second house of the women to the custody of Shazgaz, the king's chamberlain, which kept the concubines. She came in unto the king no more, except the king delighted in her, and that she were called by name. So Esther's turn came up. Her 12-year purification process is over. They've called her to come before the king. She goes to the king's chambers. And she went to his room, and that evening he took her as his wife. And when she left the chamber, she went to a different section of the women's house. She no longer goes to the virgin side. She goes to the other side where the concubines are. Now, these are the women the king has already took for a wife. In other turn, I don't know how a better way to say it, but he's been with them. Verse 15 says, now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come up to go into the king, she required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. Well, when Esther went before the king, she didn't do like all the other women. All the other women are going to choose everything at their disposal to put on the best makeup, the best hair bows, the best clothing, everything. I mean, they've got all these things they can choose from. It's kind of like, it reminds me of when you're at a party and they set up all these little things for you to use to take pictures with, the props. And so these women had all these props that they could use at their disposal before it was their turn to go before the king. So naturally, they're all going to get all these things, you know, try to stand out from everybody. But Esther didn't do that. She went in as she was, just a natural, beautiful woman. Sees that woman on the commercial that says, "Don't hate me because I'm beautiful." That's Esther. And all the women must have hated her at that point, because as she walked through, she probably had a glow about her. And she radiated pure beauty. And the king took notice. Not only the king, but even the keeper of the women, everyone around her noticed her beauty. Verse 16 says, "So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus into his royal house royal in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign." And there we have the 7th year of his reign. When we began this book in chapter 1, it was in the 3rd year of his reign. So 4 years has passed since the time he got rid of Vashti until the time that Esther comes along. And in that 4 years is when that war, that failed war on Greece, happened. So out of all the 400 women that the king had at his disposal, and probably more than that, Esther stood out above them all. And so much, he immediately chose her as the new queen. Immediately. And he placed a royal crown upon her head. None of the other women got the crown. Only Esther. Verse 18. "Then the king made a great feast unto all his princes and his servants, even Esther's feast. And he made a release to the provinces and gave gifts according to the state of the king." Now the king's back to his old self now, throwing parties. He throws a party for his new wife. He's proud of his new trophy wife. She's beautiful. He's everything that a king could ever desire. And he's going to throw a big party, show her off to everybody. Now, that section there where it says it made a release to the provinces, in that culture, it was common when a new queen came on board, the king would allow certain things to go on in the kingdom. He would forgive them of taxes. He would do all these things to help people out, forgive their debts, many things that the king would do. And that's what this release to the provinces was. He gave them gifts, the Bible says, according to the state of the king. So this was a wonderful time to be in the king's realm there in one of these 127 provinces. They're all celebrating. And, of course, all in Shushan there around the palace, everybody's come to this huge feast that he's thrown in honor of his new queen. This would make the queen very popular in the eyes of all the people, and it also would bring about a time of peace throughout all the kingdom. Now, verse 19 says, "And when the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai sat in the king's gate." Now, this second gathering that's talking about of the virgins, it's a little bit hard to figure out. And I'll be quite honest with you and tell you, I don't know exactly what it means. I don't know if the writer is referring to events that happened previously, before Esther had been chosen as queen, and he's now mentioning it. I don't know if, as all the kings in that day would do, you know, if he chose other women after her. I don't know. Or this may have been a plot. And we're going to see in just a minute there's a plot against the king's life, and this might have been part of it. Maybe these two that want to have him killed are doing this other thing to try to maybe unseat Esther from the throne. The fact is, we're unable to discern exactly what this part means, because we know she's already came up there. She's already been crowned. So what the second gathering is, I don't know. If anybody has any ideas, you let me know after the Bible study. And verse 20 says, "Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther did the commandment of Mordecai like as when she was brought up with him." Well, Esther's been very careful not to reveal her nationality. She's not told anyone she's a Jew. She's not told anyone that she's kin to Mordecai, that he's actually her stepfather and her cousin. She is respectful to Mordecai. She still holds respect for him. Even though she's queen, she has all this authority, she's still being very respectful to his authority, as someone that raised her up in his own home. Verse 21, In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth, and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. Well, we aren't told why these two chamberlains, these eunuchs that were there waiting on the king, they were his servants, we're not told why they were mad. They were wroth, just like the king, but they're very upset for some reason. I don't know what he's done to them, but they want him dead. And so they have concocted some kind of assassination plot to kill the king. Well, Mordecai finds out. I don't know if he overheard them talking, if someone else came to Mordecai and told him that this was going on. But either way, Mordecai finds out, and he goes to Esther, and he tells her about this plot to kill the king. Well, she tells the king, and she still hasn't told him how she's related to Mordecai, but she says, and this came from Mordecai. So she makes sure that the king knew it was him that told her. And there's going to be a reason for that, and we'll see that. Won't be tonight, but we'll see it in another study. So she didn't reveal her relationship with Mordecai, but he did get the credit for this. And look at verse 23. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out, therefore, that they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Well, the king sends men out to discover what these two have been plotting, and they put them on some kind of trial, find them guilty, take them out, and hang them from a tree, kill them. They were found guilty and hung. It refers to a book here. It says the book of Chronicles before the king. This is not the Chronicles in your Bible it's talking about. These are Chronicles that the Persians used to record history, to record activities going on in the kingdom. And they recorded this. No doubt the king had this transcriber right there that would take care and write things down as they happened. Well, he's chronicled of this. They've got a book, and when something happens, well, this guy sits down and writes it down. It's kind of like a diary. It's called the Chronicles. And the king will go back and refer to these Chronicles and read these Chronicles. And to learn, first of all, they would learn history through them. You could take another king's Chronicles and read the history of the kingdom and see what all transpired. And you could also use it in your own time that you were in reign to find out what's been going on since you've been king. But it was something they would keep up with. Very important. Now, these same writings are referred to again in the book of Esther in chapter 10, verse 3. They talk about it there. And it calls them the Chronicles of the Kings of Media and Persia. So a pretty exciting start to the reign of Esther as the new queen. She's been chosen. She's put on the throne. And she's already heard about an assassination attempt upon her king, and has fooled that plot. So, exciting things. I'd like to keep going tonight, but I know we're going to have to close sometime. But